Moncrief on News Talk.
One of the most obvious ways that the world's major powers willy-wave at each other is who's got the most powerful military. But there are other methods too, such as who's got the world's most powerful supercomputer. That title is just being grabbed by China, zooming past the US. Elaine Burke from the For Tech's Sake podcast is here to tell us all about it. Afternoon, Elaine.
Good afternoon.
Now, as I understand it, the US had been going out of its way to prevent China doing this by not giving them access to a particular sort of chip.
Exactly. So there's CPUs and there's GPUs.
Okay.
And they are different types of processing units. You've got GPUs are graphics processing units, and they are very popular in gaming computers so that you can process like the graphics in a computer game. But they've become increasingly important for AI level computation. So really, really complex modeling and really, really intense computational processing. But there are limits on the GPUs that can be sold to China from US companies. And that's to basically hamstring China in being able to have the computing capacity that the US has. And they have now developed this supercomputer that has no GPUs in it. It has some very interestingly designed CPUs that can kind of mimic some of that processing capability that you see in GPUs. Now, not at the same level of the AI capabilities, but in terms of traditional computing, they have beaten every other supercomputer that's listed in this thing called the top 500 twice a year. Now, not every computer is submitted to be listed here, but of the computers that were assessed and listed, this computer, which only really came into commission started this year, it was never on the list before, debuted at number one, and it's 22% more powerful than the previous number one, which was El Capitan, a computer out of the US.
Wow. Okay, and who does that assessing, and what's the basis on which they assess it?
So this is the top 500 list, and the way they measure it is they're looking at the computational processing speed. So there's something called a flop in computing. It's a really fun word, and essentially is a unit of computer processing. So one flop is like a computational process being done in maybe a second. And these computers, this Lineshine computer out of China, can process over 2 quintillion flops per second. So that's a 19 digit number.
Yeah.
2.19 exaflops is what it is. It's just like normally you'd actually hear things being measured in petaflops. So this is another level up again. So it's really, really, really powerful. And interestingly enough, what you were talking about there with things like the weather and how that's impacting people and stuff like that. What these are really, really useful for, these supercomputers, is weather forecasting and weather modeling and weather prediction, because that's really complex. It's not as easy as you have historical weather data and you can forecast what the weather is going to be like at any day of the year this year, because there's so many other factors that come to bear. The historical data is one aspect, but you know, other things like the changing climate and all the climate science that feeds into it. It's hugely complex to try and model weather systems and make predictions and accurate predictions for even like, you know, a few hours from now, but even a few weeks from now, if you want to be prepared for major events. And that's what these things can be used for. And this Lineshine computer was used to process about 10 years to test their weather predictions from 2016 to 2025. And it did it in 14.6 hours, which is actually very, very, very fast for this kind of thing.
So why are is it just for doing weather forecasts, or why are they important?
They can do other things like studying things at the atomic level. So if you're thinking of like trying to get into the nitty gritty of the composition of materials and understanding the way different atomic level particles will interact with each other, again, that's really big numbers. It's a lot of things happening, and it's a lot of variables. So anything like that, you'll need supercomputers to do the processing. Like, you know, a traditional computer could attempt to do it, but it could take them years to do what these things can do in hours.
Okay. And can they be, well, that's all kind of benign uses. Can they be used for more sinister things?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that El Capitan computer in the US that I mentioned, that was number one for a number of years, that is actually used to develop and manage the nuclear military capacity of
that's
the US.
Reassuring.
So, yeah, you have that aspect of it as well.
Yeah. And this, I assume, is, well, it is a matter of national pride, or it's, you know, there's a degree of we beat you kind of thing about
absolutely
this.
And you know, people like to talk about, like, in the technology race, you know, it's always really talking about the US and China being vying at the top there. And I think what's really remarkable here is the fact that China has leapt to the top of this chart without using the kind of computational chips that are being described as at the forefront of the future of computing. This design that they've done here to try and mimic some of those more intensive computing processes on a different kind of chip, that's actually a really huge advancement for computer science. So they've highlighted that by shooting themselves to the top of this list and submitting this computer for the list to be evaluated. Now, there's other computers out there that could be even more powerful than this. We just don't know about it. Okay. So a lot of the private companies that are developing AI factories, so these massive supercomputers that are like built like a big factory warehouse, but it's just full of chips that are processing all the time. So there's one called Colossus that's been built by XAI, the company owned by Elon Musk. And we don't necessarily have a lot of detail on that because they don't submit to this list. They probably want to keep their information more close to hand and might be more proprietary about it. Google would have supercomputers and things like that that we probably don't know what their capabilities fully are.
Yeah. How big is a physically, how big is a supercomputer?
Oh, these would be huge. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because like, even when I say the chips, like we're probably thinking of something really, really tiny when we think of a computer chip, but the likes of these kind of chips, they wouldn't be that tiny either. Like this, and then you have racks and racks and racks of them. So it would look a bit something more like a data center. And it's funny because when we think about the early computers, when you see a film like Hidden Figures, and they walk into a room and that's a computer fills the entire room. These would fill a warehouse. You know, it's going kind of going back to that earlier version of computers where they would be these big physical hulking beasts of things. But the advancements in the technology inside them means that you don't need that. You can do a lot more with that, what the space that fills. Whereas before, you know, they were doing much simpler computations on a room sized computer than they can do now.
Yeah. And are supercomputers AI? I mean, I know we kind of use the term with wild abandon now that everything's AI. Is that what this is?
So AI is essentially like really complex computer modeling.
Yeah.
Right. And that not all computer science is AI. AI is a branch of it. And even AI itself has lots of things that branch off of it. So you could use AI computations in things like weather modeling and forecasting, but you can also do it in other traditional computing ways as well. So they're not like overlapping completely. And as I mentioned, Lineshine isn't built really for some of the more advanced AI computational processes. It actually ranks fourth, I believe, when it comes to the more AI-based workflows and that kind of processing.
Okay.
So it's a slightly different type of computer science and computer processing.
Yeah. The fact that they've done it, though, without these GDUs is obviously significant. So might then other companies be looking at this, or other countries be looking at this and going, why can't we do this too?
That's what's really interesting here. So it kind of shows that there are other options, there are other ways to work and to be innovative in these spaces, even when you've got more limitations. And China already showed this before when they released DeepSeek, their large language model that rivaled something the likes of ChatGPT. And they again did that without access to the same kind of computing power that the people who built these other models had access to. And it kind of shows that you can still achieve these things without having to chase these new developments, these new advancements, because designing new computer chips is at the forefront of this AI race at the moment. And they think some of the new advancements won't be out until 2027. So to kind of achieve the things that people are forecasting in AI, we haven't really built the things to do that yet. Like if you're talking about like every single worker having an AI assistant and things like that, we don't necessarily have the physical capacity to deliver on that stuff. And chasing, trying to build it out at the kind of in the vision that they built out, that you need this more advancement, that you need to bring things forward rather than trying to work in a more limited way, actually, I think is the wrong way to go. If you try and work with limitations, you get better innovations, I would say.
Yeah. And does all this mean, as this progresses, larger and larger data centers?
Well, like a supercomputer, like I said, would pretty much look like a data center. It is just a big load of computing power on server racks and things like that. I think data centers are slightly different because they wouldn't be running computational processes. So these supercomputers would be way more energy intensive. So we're already hearing about the energy intensity of data centers, and that's for mostly data storage. And when data is being stored and not accessed and being processed all the time, it wouldn't take as much energy. It still takes a lot, but it wouldn't take as much as if you were trying to process that information all the time or even access it. And actually, there was a really funny story last year during the UK's drought, which has now become an annual event.
Yeah.
the government had even issued something saying that people should delete some emails. And actually, that would put more stress on the servers because stuff that was just lying there being latent would suddenly be being accessed and being processed. So they were giving bad advice in that case. So these would be even more energy intensive than data centres. Is the thing to bear in mind.
Does Ireland have a supercomputer?
We do, yes. So we're actually in the process of upgrading to a new one. But our current supercomputer is called Kay. It's named after a woman called Kay McNulty, who was one of the first computer programmers of a system called ENIAC, which was one of the first kind of digital computer programs. And its peak is at about 1 quadrillion flops per second. So it's a good bit less than the Lineshine computer, but that's at its peak. It's usually running at a bit less than that. And again, we'd use it for things like that. Like researchers can request access to Kay to help them with if they need to do some complex computation and stuff like that. But we're for 2027 working toward a new system called Casper. And that means Computational Analysis and Simulation Platform for Ireland. It's not as fun of a name as Kay, but and yeah, so we're building out that new upgrade for Casper now. And then,
But is Casper than a completely new set of boxes, so to speak, or they're just building, they're turning K into Casper, kind of stuff.
That's one part I'm not sure of, and I'm not. I know that Casper is going to be hosted in Galway, so I know that much. But yeah, I would assume that you would try to, you know, recycle what you can. But like I was saying earlier about the hardware problems, the reason I was saying that the AI race, they're talking about 2027 for the next generation of that hardware. They also think that hardware is going to run out pretty quickly as well. So if you're doing this kind of processing, the hardware does wear out. So you would like to be able to upcycle and recycle and improve things, but you would probably have to keep every few years. K was commissioned in 2017, became live in 2018, I think. So every few years, you would need to probably replace the hardware practically entirely.
And also, isn't there a shortage of chips, of the stuff to make chips? And Apple is putting up its prices because for all those reasons.
Yeah, so I mean, all of your electronics, you're going to see prices going up. It's already started happening and it's increasingly going to become a thing. And gamers have noticed this firsthand, first and foremost, because GPUs, as I said, they're very important if you're a gamer. But now all GPUs are being siphoned off by the AI industry. So like the gaming industry doesn't make these companies as much money to sell into on a consumer level. If they can sell to a business that wants to buy thousands of GPUs at once, it's much better for them. So that's what's happening with the chip industry now. And even the development of chips, everything is kind of, in terms of production, shifting towards providing GPUs and next level GPUs and things like that. So even like more simple chips that would run more simple electronics, the production lines aren't geared towards that as much as they used to be. They're shifting towards what's most profitable at the moment.
And China exports a fair amount of chips, or do they keep them for themselves?
And in design and things like that, like I said, this thing that they've done with Lineshine and designing a CPU that can, you know, mirror some of the capabilities of a GPU, they would be definitely leaders in that. And, you know, if you're releasing the science on that and if you're, you know, publishing works around that, that helps the entire industry to level up each time that that kind of information is shared.
Yeah. Elaine, thanks a million for coming into us. As usual, that was Elaine Burke there of the For Tech's Sake podcast.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.